Okay, let us indeed continue from the point where we stopped the day before yesterday. Is it focused? Okay, so let me just remind you briefly where we are at the moment. We are interested in extracting asymptotics, so-called Planck-Shiller rota asymptotics of Hermitian polynomials with a large index. And we introduced an integral representation in a convenient form, in form suggestive of the use of the saddle point approximation that we, I believe, extensively discussed last time, and we arrived to the problem of asymptotic evaluation of integral of this sort, where we have a large parameter m in front of the function given by such a form. A stationary point or saddle point condition is just vanishing of the derivative of a parameter of integration q. We found two this equation amounts immediately to a quadratic equation, which is very helpful in producing the explicit formula for saddle points. We see that in general there are two saddle points, and definitely the presence of this square root tells us that we should consider separately three cases. The first one, when this expression is positive, so absolute value of x smaller than 2. Second one will be, in fact, this one, when there is no square root. Or basically, we will discuss when we approach in the point x equal to 2 in a non-trivial way. It's not just, we will see how it's done later on. And finally, in principle, one should one can discuss absolute value of x larger than 2, but I will argue in my notes there is a discussion of this case, but I'll suppress this discussion to maybe one phrase, but details in principle can be found in lecture notes. So these are two main cases of interest. It will be clear why. And let us consider just why one by one. So first case, when this expression 4 minus x squared is positive, so absolute value of x smaller than 2, then natural and convenient parameterization is just to parameterize x as 2 times cosine of some angle phi, changing between 0 and pi. We immediately see, if we just put it, put this expression here, why it's convenient, because it's immediately, first of all, clear that both saddle points, q plus and q minus, they are unimodular. They both have modulus 1. And they are symmetric, of course, with respect to the imaginary axis. And it's quite evident and can be formally proved that since our contour of integration starts at zero and extends to infinity, we only should take care of one of them, to which we can naturally deform our original contour of integration, which goes along the real line, in order to be able to apply the saddle point method. We should deform this contour as making it to pass through the saddle point, and not only this, but we should take care that it comes from one negative sector, if you still remember this terminology introduced when we discussed the saddle point method, to different negative sector, I remind you that in fact, in the vicinity of the saddle point, complex plane was partitioned in four sectors, two negative and two positive, and to ensure that contribution comes from the saddle point, the main contribution, asymptotic contribution when our parameter n is large comes from the vicinity of the saddle point, one needs to ensure that contour passes in correct way. That it's possible to deform contour in such a way that it passes through the saddle point in correct way, incorrect in a sense discussed by us before. And basically one can show that second saddle point as it's very natural from this figure. It's irrelevant, one cannot draw the contour correspondingly. But this saddle point is operative. So only this point Q plus is relevant, and we remember that this notion of positive and negative sectors amounts to studying real part of our exponent f of q. In our variables phi, it's just equal to 1/2 of cosine of 2 phi. Looking at our expression for f of q, it's clear that close to the origin, close to infinity, this expression tends to minus infinity, and therefore indeed both endpoints of the integration contour belong to negative sectors, and the only care should be taken that they belong to different negative sectors. And I give a very short discussion of this point in the lecture notes, but just this is the case. Otherwise, I won't discuss this method. Otherwise contribution would be given by one of endpoints of the integration path. So we can apply general formula for the leading order contribution. For this we need also to know the value of second derivative at saddle point. In terms of our variable phi, it's given by this expression, so we see that constant C entering saddle point expression, that general expression that we derived, absolute value equal to sine phi, and corresponding phase equal to phi plus phi over 2. Now we use also obvious symmetry relation valid for real values of x. I didn't notice that indeed some complex appears here. Bar means complex conjugation, not the averaging. As I promised, they won't interfere. They interfere. Shame on me. Okay. Still, hopefully, it's obvious that I meant that just complex conjugation of this integral gives values for minus x, as it's trivial to see from the definition of the integral, for real values of parameter x. And substituting all this information to the formula that we derived earlier, one immediately, after very simple algebra, comes to the required asymptotic for our polynomial. Written in this form, some factors and cosine of long and huge argument. This is non-trivial asymptotics because we keep not only terms in this argument proportional to n, but also we keep next to the leading order term, and this is instrumental for getting non-trivial results for the quantities we're interested in. It depends explicitly on this index k, which is kept constant of order of unity when we consider these asymptotics. Let us now see. So we have now asymptotics of orthogonal polynomials, but it's not that we were just interested in these asymptotics. It's interesting for many applications, but we are interested in particular application for understanding behavior of eigenvalues of Gaussian random matrices from Gaussian unitary invariant ensemble. So we discuss X, which we have there, is now called lambda, because we use lambda for spectral parameter when we discuss statistics of eigenvalues. And in particular, it means that we are discussing case absolute value of lambda smaller than 2, lambda fixed, and n tends to infinity. And this regime can be called, frequently called in literature, bulk scaling regime. And why bulk scaling will be clear at the moment. Here I just repeat, for reference purposes, expression for the mean. Here bar means averaging over our probability distribution of all eigenvalues. So mean eigenvalue density is given, it's exact for arbitrary n. Now we are interested in extracting large n behavior, asymptotic behavior of this expression. We see that here enters Hermite polynomials exactly at n and n plus and minus 1. So we need to operate with this index k accurately to extract. We cannot suppress it, otherwise we get 0. I rewrite this formula in the following way. I just separate term proportional to k and k times phi and call log expression which enters that formula as alpha. And we see, if we from this expression, we see that we need, when we just take this asymptotics, put it here, here and here, for corresponding values of k 0, minus 1, and plus 1, we see that we deal, in fact, with this expression will be proportional to cosine squared of alpha minus cosine of alpha plus phi and alpha minus phi, coming from these terms. And trivial identity that it's equal to sine squared of phi independent on alpha. Also, we should use a Stirling asymptotic expression for factorial, which enters this formula. And we also put a value for lambda. I recall that lambda is equal to 2 cosine phi, parameterized in this fashion in that region. So for exponential term, we get exponential minus n 1 plus cosine of 2 phi. And it's clear now that when we take product of either square Hermite polynomial or take product of 2, we have, therefore, a factor here, 2 goes away, and we have n cosine 2 phi, and here we have minus n cosine 2 phi, so all exponential factors go away. And what else do we have? We have sine squared from this bracket, sine squared, and we also have 1 over sine from product of 2 polynomials. For product or square of polynomials, because we have 1 over square root of sine of phi, so we have 1 over sine phi is the result of the product, times sine squared phi, we have sine phi. And remember, in relation between lambda and cosine, we see that sine phi is just square root of 4 minus lambda squared. So taking into account accurately all these phis and n's, we see that everything goes away, and in particular, limiting value of 1 divided by n, times mean eigenvalue density has a well-defined limit, which I call rho infinity. Important fact that I should divide here by n to get a finite limit, which is very, very natural, of course. And this is the famous Wigner semicircle. To get truly semicircle, I must plot 2 pi rho infinity versus delta in order just to have this square root. So it will be then semicircle. Otherwise, it will be elliptic. But it's traditionally called Wigner semicircle. And we see in particular that typical distance between neighboring eigenvalues, which we called delta, and we already agreed that it should be just 1 divided by rho n, and for a large n, we see that it's just as we expected, of the order of 1 over n, and given by this expression. So now we have explicit expression for the mean density, mean distance between neighboring eigenvalues. It's frequently called spacing, mean spacing. close to a given point lambda inside the spectrum. If lambda is the origin, then it will be just rho infinity taken at zero. Okay, this is the expression for the density. By the way, now it's clear why we discuss bulk scaling, because basically we see from this expression that all eigenvalues more or less are concentrated between minus 2 and 2. In first approximation, we will see that it's not asymptotically this is correct statement, but one should be, of course, careful close to this edge point. We will discuss it later on. But just in first approximation, when n goes to infinity, all eigenvalues accumulate in the interval between minus 2 and 2, and this is corresponding density. So we call this regime smaller than 2 and larger than minus 2 the bulk of the spectrum. So that's why we call bulk scaling regime. Okay, now we are interested mostly, we remember that all correlation functions they express in terms of the function called kernel, a function of two variables for which we have explicit expression in terms of normalized orthonormal Hermite polynomials, and we proceed exactly in the same fashion. Corresponding algebra is a little bit more involved, but I try to elucidate. It's simple, still simple, but one should take care of one important fact, namely that we are mostly interested in studying the behavior of this object when arguments lambda and lambda dash separated by distance of order of typical spacing between neighboring eigenvalues, because we are interested really in studying how neighboring or maybe next to nearest neighbor and so on eigenvalues are correlated. And we are interested, if you remember, mainly in fluctuations of number of eigenvalues in intervals whose length is it's comparable in some sense with mean separation between neighboring eigenvalues. It can be maybe 100 of these distances in principle, but it's still much, much smaller than the total. Stretch of our spectrum. So in this sense, this is local regime. We are interested in behavior of this function for arguments lambda and lambda dash just separated by small distance, small in comparison with this scale, but basically comparable with scale delta, which is asymptotically very small, 1/n. Okay, and this leads to important simplification. And this scaling, when we keep distance between arguments to be of the order of 1/n when performing the limit n to infinity, this is known as, mostly in the literature, as bulk scaling limit, and sometimes also called Dyson limit, sometimes also called local scaling limit, but local bulk scaling limit, because there will be also another scaling limit discussed later on. So we keep a distance between arguments of order of 1/n. Just looking at a asymptotic expression for Hermite polynomials, we see that it's convenient. Again, as before, use this parameterization in terms of angles phi and then phi dash, and because of the role played by typical value of lambda and distance between them being much smaller, it's natural to introduce two variables, just difference between phis and sum over two phis, and this will be always treated as to be of order of unity, but this will be treated as object of order of 1/n. So it's natural just to scale it appropriately to introduce new variable small case omega, which is basically n times this difference. and treat this small case omega as a quantity of order of unity when performing limit n to infinity. This is natural scaling. So we put back to this expression our asymptotics for Hermite polynomials. We end up with expression very similar in structure to what we dealt with when discussed the density of states. A little bit more complicated expression arises here because then there is no such, it's not immediate to simplify it to such nice structure as here, but basically one just does asymptotic expansion, Taylor expansion to first non-trivial non-vanishing order. And here I give some details of this manipulation, but they are a little bit boring. Anyway, you can I think I also put them into notes, but here they are just given explicitly how you treat asymptotically the product of the difference of these products of cosines and to the leading order. We have here such an expression. Then we remember that we also should use expression for lambda minus lambda dash. With this approximation, is just proportional to this omega over n and times mean density of eigenvalues. We operate in similar fashion with exponential term and see again that it will cancel away corresponding term here. Oof, maybe it's it's correct. Here it's with plus sign, there it's with minus sign. So they to the leading order these exponential terms cancel, and we end up after all this algebra to quite simple expression that limiting value of our kernel function divided by the value of this function at coinciding arguments, which we remember is just mean density of eigenvalues, can be written down the following way. It's some well-defined function having a limiting shape of the following argument n times this quantity, semicircular density, rho infinity, presented there, times lambda minus lambda dash. And this object is of order of unity because lambda minus lambda dash, please remember, is of order of 1 over n in our limit. So n times this is of order of unity. So this is just argument of order of unity, which we call R. And this function, as a function of its argument, is just famous Dyson kernel, sine pi R divided by pi R. Having this, we immediately can write down an important object that we introduced before related to fluctuations of number of eigenvalues in a given interval. This is a two-point cluster function. We remember it's basically proportional to squared kernel, or maybe even just equal to squared kernel. And in the scaling limit, we get such an expression that up to factors proportional to the density of eigenvalues at points lambda and lambda dash, we just have to square this expression. And due to presence of sign, behavior of the corresponding function, the function of argument R just shows oscillations. Frequently in the literature, they plot not y, but r equal to 1 minus y. And then expression is, in fact, this screen just blocks you from seeing exactly the picture which I'm going to present here, which Eugene Bogomolny, I believe, drawn yesterday. This is this picture, which is 1 minus this function. Just for you to recognize that this is exactly this function. If you just subtract 1, you will get this. So what can be inferred from our result? We see these wiggles, and what are the meaning of these oscillations? Basically, they reflect the fact that eigenvalues form a kind of frequently it's referred as pseudo-crystalline structure. It means that they are very ordered. They are, despite the fact that they are random, typically they are separated by distance of order of delta, and they do not like to be much. The distance is much shorter than delta or much larger than delta. So they are pretty regular. Of course, there is a fluctuation in the longer run. If you just look, you will see that it's not just like periodic sequence. But to much extent, there is some hidden periodicity, and this is reflected in terms of the two-point correlation function basically by this wiggle. And there is another manifestation of this. I won't discuss it, but just the fact that integral is easy to see, that integral of this function is just equal to 1. Okay. We remember that having at our this function at our disposal, we can calculate the so-called number variance of number of eigenvalues inside any given interval. Let me just consider for simplicity interval of the length L centered at the origin. Expression derived by us earlier was just that this variance is equal to mean value minus double integral of the two-point cluster function. We are interested, as I mentioned already many times, but it's important to always to remember, in most of cases, not of course in all cases, but in most of cases, we are interested in local properties. It means local in spectrum, that we are interested in stretches or in the intervals with lengths L of order of typical separation between neighboring eigenvalues. 10, 100, but still much smaller. These distances are much smaller than the total span of our spectrum, than which is equal to 4. Okay, then it's natural to measure length L in units of delta, and we introduce such delta as a typical length scale in which we measure all lengths. So L in terms of delta is just equal to S, so L is equal to S times delta, and distance between arguments lambda and lambda dash, it means the distance between two points here, we just call it as before R times delta. The total distance is R times delta. Okay, then we immediately see that the above expression reduces to such a formula. Okay, this is what comes from the first term. And this is trivially, so of course, a mean number of eigenvalues, of course, is just S in this unit, by definition, in fact. And here we have the following integral where, okay, here there is double integral, but recall that this function depends not separately on lambda and lambda dash, but on the difference, lambda minus lambda dash. Therefore, this variable R is distance. Therefore, double integral can be converted to one-fold integral just with respect to this relative distance R. This is done here. Sine pi r over pi r squared is exactly our cluster function. And using simple integrations, we can rewrite this expression in a different form, which is especially convenient for analysis of the behavior of this function at large values of s. So now we ask the following question. We have an interval of the length large in comparison with individual separation between eigenvalues. It means containing many eigenvalues, but still much smaller than the total stretch of n eigenvalues. And we are interested in finding how number of eigenvalues falling in this interval fluctuates at large values of s. We see that for large values of s, this integral produces small contribution because, you see, integration goes from pi s to infinity. So when s is large, this of course small contribution. And main contribution comes from the term 1 over x dx, which is just logarithmically divergent at upper limit. So we immediately see that leading asymptotic behavior is just 1 over pi squared log of 2 pi s. With more effort, one can even calculate the next correction term, which is just given in terms of the Euler constant. And in principle, one can calculate higher terms, it's just a well-defined expression. But we immediately see that leading asymptotic behavior is logarithmic. So, number variance for random unitary random Hermitian matrices grows with parameter s logarithmically, and this should be contrasted with corresponding behavior for uncorrelated sequence. We once derived it; it amounted to first term s, so it just grows linearly. We see that in fact fluctuations are much suppressed; they grow very slow in comparison with the case of just uncorrelated points on the line. And this is again manifestation of the fact that they are not independent at all, but rather form quite regular sequence. If they would be just completely periodic, of course, there will be no fluctuation at all. But they are not. They are still fluctuating. But this number grows very slowly, logarithmically, in contrast to linear growth for uncorrelated case. I won't give any calculations of whole probability. This is really a complicated exercise requiring considerable amount of effort and time, and done, maybe it will be done when theory of Fredholm determinants related to random matrices will be discussed. I just quote the results. For comparison reasons, that whole probability decays as in Gaussian fashion much faster than just simple exponential decay for independent random numbers on the line, and it's again another evidence of regular structure of eigenvalues, because you see they not only don't like to be close, they also it's very improbable to have large holes in the spectrum free of eigenvalues, because they are quite regularly spaced. Okay, I do not have to say more on this subject. I think I quoted few of the most interesting and important results on spectra of random matrices, and they all point towards quite regular structure of this sequence and correlated structure of sequence of this eigenvalue. Okay. Now I come to this. Let me remind you that so far we discussed the behavior of eigenvalues pertinent to the bulk of the spectrum between points minus 2 and 2 inside our semicircle. Now let us discuss what happens close to the edge of this semicircle. This is called naturally spectral edge regime. And first we discuss it for Hermite polynomials, and then we discuss it for spectral quantities. So now we are back to Hermite polynomials, and we discuss the case when parameter is equal to 2. Then we remember that two saddle points just degenerate into 1. limiting value when x tends to 2 of q plus and q minus, they equal each other in equal to I. And we see that we cannot use standard saddle point technique because contributions from domains around this point start to interfere. So one should really study this case separately. And I give here qualitative discussion of what happens here. So let us try to understand when what is the criterion for our saddle point methods to fail. It's more or less clear. Usually, in standard saddle point method, we just have one saddle point, and main contribution to the integral comes from the domain of the widths which I call W, which can be estimated from the just Gaussian form of the corresponding integral. It's just inverse square root of second derivative of the function in exponential. It's just a trivial fact from the Gaussian integral. On other hand, distance between these two points is absolute value of q plus minus q minus. It should be much larger than typical widths. Then one can treat them as separate independent contributions and, for example, add them up. But if distance between saddle points is comparable or even smaller than the width of the region around saddle point, which gives contribution to the integral, of course one should do better because one cannot just add up these two contributions. So let us now make an estimate where this non-trivial region starts. How close to the edge x equal 2 we should come to feel this effect? The distance between points is trivial if we have, I hope you have these expressions, explicit expressions for q plus and q minus. They are different by the square root of 4 minus x squared. So this is exactly the distance. Now, we also have expression for the second derivative presented a few slides before, and one finds that it's equal to such an expression. So, and parameter n enters exactly here. So just let us find the regime when this expression and that expression are of the same order of magnitude. And we see, just trivial comparison, close to, basically, to get this, if it's not immediately clear, we use simple things, square root of 4 minus x squared equal to square root of 2 minus x 2 plus x, and then close to 2, of course, 2 plus x is just 4, so it's approximately equal to 2 square root of 2 minus x. This is the replacement which should be done, and then one arrives immediately at the following result, that if one comes to the edge point 2, I discuss here x equal 2. Of course, exactly the same discussion by symmetry is valid for point minus 2. But I discuss only point equal 2, so just right edge of the spectrum. When one comes to the distance inversely proportional to n to 2/3, so distance which shrinks to 0 when n goes to infinity, of course, as it should be, then one has to replace this simple-minded saddle point approximation for Hermite polynomials that we used with a better treatment. And we also observe that in this regime, typical distance between two saddle points scales as n to minus 1/3. And therefore, these two facts, this fact and that fact, suggest that it's better to come to a new set of variables which just explicitly takes into account this correct scaling with large parameter n. Namely, instead of x, introduce a new parameter xi, which is just n to 2/3 2 minus x. Basically, it's obtained by if x is in this regime, then xi is of order of unity, just to have parameter which is of order of unity in the interesting regime. and also to make shift of integration variable, introduce new integration variable, which is appropriately scaled. Just we see that that interesting regime, interesting domain around the saddle point scales its width as 1 over n to 1/3. So let us just explicitly introduce variable t of order of unity with this factor to take care of the corresponding regime. Now we have, to recall, in this domain, by the way, it's convenient not to use decomposition of a Hermit polynomial into sums, like I did before, but just technically it's more convenient to consider integral from minus infinity to infinity. So this was exact expression for the Hermit polynomial. Now, make a shift according to this rule. Make a shift of contour of integration from the real axis to contour which passes through the saddle point I, because saddle point is I in when n tends to infinity. Relevant saddle point is just I. So this amounts to replacing all q's with this expression, and also replace x with corresponding psi. This amounts to such a replacement here. Now, consider parameters t and psi according to our discussion as quantities of order of unity, and perform corresponding expansions when parameter n goes to infinity. And you end up with quite compact expression in terms of a well-known special function known as every function, and in particular in this way you arrive to such a representation for every function which is known in the literature. Here just for reference purposes give a because at least before starting to work in this field I never encountered every function. I of course knew about its existence, but it was not clear for me how it behaves. So maybe for some of you it's also not very known function. So it behaves in the following way. It's for negative argument, it just oscillates and exponentially decays immediately when you cross zero. And more precisely, one can investigate asymptotic behavior for large psi of this integral, by the way, exactly again by saddle point method, but applied to this integral. And one gets that for psi tending to plus infinity, here I present it in this way. I just change argument to minus psi by some historical reason. Not by historical, but by these reasons, because it enters here. Sorry, I forgot why it was necessary. Because every function of minus psi in such a definition enters here, so we are interested in behavior of minus psi. So basically, then one should change this picture. But anyway, these oscillations are described by cosine with amplitude depending on psi. Therefore, this amplitude changes, and exponential decay is described by such asymptotics. Any function is very nice function. It's very important in wave scattering, in probability theory, in many, many, many applications. Really, when you start looking, it appears here and there. It's solution of this simple differential equation. Second derivative of a function equal to the argument of a function times function itself. I think it's equation of this type is basically next degree of complexity after second order differential equation with constant coefficient, just coefficient depending, just proportional to psi. So it's important to know, and that's why it in fact appears in many, many applications. So now we know this behavior. We can try to use it to understand what happens with the density of states and corresponding spectral kernel, two-point kernel, at the H scaling limit. So what means now we are discussing what happens close to the H to the distance, as we know, close to the edge, to the distance, we are 2 is exactly edge of our semicircle. It ends there. So when n just set to infinity without much thinking, we just have that eigenvalues, density of eigenvalues vanishes at 2. But if we look with a magnifying glass at the vicinity of this edge, it means we keep non-trivial scaling with n. So we just discuss the distances from 2 of order 1 over n 2/3, and n is large. Then, okay, again, I repeat expression for the mean density in terms of Hermite polynomials. But here there is one unpleasant feature. I found it. I was not quite aware of it before writing this transparency. That if you just take this this expression and put it there, expression vanishes and produces zero. So one needs to evaluate asymptotics to the higher order, in fact, to get non-trivial expression for the density. So one can do it in this way, study more accurately the asymptotics of this expression in order to avoid this cancellation, or one can do it a little bit differently, and I found this way more instructive and in fact simpler. Namely, just take exact integral representation that we use many times, namely this one, for Hermite polynomials, and put it here. Then we, of course, will have double integral, because we have product of two Hermite polynomials. We will have expression in terms of double integral over now Q1 and Q2, and it can be written down in a form which again allows application of our technique, because this technique of evaluation of integrals is can be with some care, but here it's justified just applied in the same way to multiple integrals. Expressions in the exponential are just our old expressions. We have two of them, and we have some pre-exponential factor. We know what is correct scaling, exactly the same as before. So we just make corresponding expansion there, and we arrive after some care is taken, I will explain in a moment, to the following expression, that mean density of eigenvalues at points at distance psi over n 2/3 from spectral h, given in terms of a function in this form, a function should be now, in order to have well-defined expression for a function, it's okay to use this expression. But suppose you'd like just to use the same expression and differentiate this function over argument. It's clear if you differentiate, parameter t comes in front and integral is divergent, because cosine cannot help with linearly growing function. So what is the way out? In fact, there is a definition of every function, which, by the way, just naturally appears in this consideration. Namely, one can deform the contour of integration to ensure that also derivatives or high derivatives of every function, basically given by just differentiating an integral representation. For this, one should deform the contour of integration from the real axis to this pink curve, namely, which asymptotically is whose asymptotic coincides with straight line with argument pi over 6 here and 5 pi over 6 in this quadrant. Then it's immediate to see that, okay, we have this argument, so when we cube it, we have exponential of I pi over 2, therefore we have I here times I minus, this gives decay, and therefore we can safely have convergent expressions along this contour for this sort, for derivative, for second derivative. In fact, second derivative is proportional to function itself, as we remember from differential equation. But here it just appears as with t squared there. So we have this expression for the density. If we just plot it, we see that this describes fine structure of the end of our semicircle. So if you just take a magnifying glass and look at the edge of your semicircle, you should have something like that. In fact, I just In old book by Porter, I found numerical work by Wigner himself, who plotted eigenvalue density for matrix of the size 51. I don't know why 51, in fact, but he somehow made this choice, and you see that it's in fact quite nicely in correspondence with this. With this behavior, despite the fact that it's still not asymptotic, but nevertheless. And the same procedure which I avoid, and this will just end here, this lecture, the same procedure gives rise to the so-called A-ray kernel, I believe due to Tracy and Whedon, which is only more or less 10 years old, I believe, in contrast to Dyson work, which is 40 years old. So this is basically the limiting value of scaling value for the corresponding kernel function expressed in terms of any function and its derivative. Thank you.
In the argument you are giving, if you consider other symmetries, beta.
No.
Where would beta come in? Where?
Beta, you mean this 1, 2, 4?
1, 2, 4, yeah. You are considering 2. Yeah.
Oh, it enters because then you will have no not this expression for the mean density, but you will have more complicated, you will have one more term at least. Yes, one integral term involving Hermite polynomials, and then you should make appropriate approximations for it. And then, is your question related to the form to the shape of the density or with curve?
You are discussing the edge of the semicircle.
Yes, yes.
The edge of the semicircle you have for irrespective of the value of the.
Yes, yes, it's possible, but you see, I never checked it, but formally speaking, will be different, will be one more term. But I expect that if you just accurately approximate the term, probably it vanishes in that limit. This most possible answer. I never checked personally, but definitely we know that kernel will be different, it will be more complicated, two-point kernel, but otherwise...
The scaling will be the same, except...
Scaling will be the same. Scaling will be the same.
That
but
is what I am asking. Can you say directly that the scaling will be the same?
You mean this n two-thirds?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. This is quite easy. Because indeed one can show from integral representation that these two several... Because all this argument, in fact, gives you immediately that everything is determined by coalescence of two saddle points. Yeah. Which these two saddle points exactly the same as appear in... as dominate. Just expressions are a little bit different. Pre-exponential terms. But exponential is just the same. So, of course, one immediately gets
the oscillations will probably be slightly different too. This is your question. My prediction is that they will be more prominent. It will be something more or less similar, but the prediction...
Okay, I have nothing to say. I never looked at this.
Wigner's calculation, was that for complex Hermitian matrices or real symmetric matrices?
For complex Hermitian, at least what I referred to.
Because that's a bit surprising, because... He was mainly concerned with real symmetric.
But you see, in fact, it's much easier when he wished to have explicit analytical expressions.
The numerical.
He gave it.
That is for real.
Okay,
symmetric.
I should check. I believe complex Hermitian because it was in that chapter in Porter's book. But I should just
checked, as I yes. say, I would expect the oscillations to be more prominent.
Okay.
And just a tiny little thing. Yeah. My eyesight is not so good, but this distance. But I suspect that on your left side, in the last equation but one, it's minus a quarter also for the psi lessening.
You mean here?
Yes, actually.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Yes, I believe that the scaling, first of all, you need to shift the edge of the semicircle towards zero. That stays the same regardless of theta. But then you also have to stretch it out to get the mean spacing to be one. And to do that, you actually need to divide by the square root of beta.
Okay. Agreed.
It's just another little comment. As you and I were discussing yesterday, in the old literature on spectra of disordered systems in quantum mechanics, not done with random matrix theory, in the early 1960s, also near the edges of bands, if you have a white noise potential, which is some approximation in the same conceptual universe as random matrix theory, they used that, then also there were airy formulas with decorations near the band edges. And I tracked down the original paper with the airy in the Christian Lloyd 1960. So there's some precedent for this. Although, of course, what Tracy Lippman did was a proper calculation in random matrix theory.
But I just checked your that paper. It's very interesting. Thank you for that reference. I checked it yesterday. They discuss only mean density. They never, in those times, of course, studied something like more correlations or what there.
Absolutely. Yes. This is mean density.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a reason that one would expect from the beginning that you have airy differential equations at the height?
More or less, quite. You see, if you know that you deal with Hermite polynomials, it's very well known fact that Hermite polynomials, just a solution of differential equation close to the edge point, must have airy function as asymptotic, because it's just easy to show from differential equation that it goes to differential equation for airy function in the corresponding limit. It's very simple thing. Maybe it's worth even discussing in that terms, but I prefer, because I systematically use integral representations, I want to show it from the integral representation. One also can derive it in this way.
Other questions? Let's thank the speaker.
Okay. I mainly covered everything that you asked, but